The music you're listening to right now is by Andre 3000. It's off of his new album, New Blue Sun. And if you're wondering why I am using my NPR voice, it's strictly to point out that some of you actually fell for that. Some of you actually thought that that was music from his album because you have not listened to it. You're telling people you've listened. You haven't. No. As you can tell from what Luxury is now playing, we're going further back in time to the year 2000. This episode of One Song goes out to all the baby mamas, mama mamas, baby mamas, 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 all the mamas and all the babies. That's right. On this episode of One Song, we're apologizing a trillion times and talking about OutKast's seminal three times platinum Billboard chart topping ode to complicated relationships. That's right. We are talking OutKast and the song Miss Jackson.
If you're nasty.
Different Miss Jackson.
Oh, okay.
In fact, let's play a clip of the Miss Jackson.
Oh, the,
we
let's,
are
let's
talking
get the right
about
Miss Jackson. Yeah. Okay.
Baby mama's mama. Yeah, go like this. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
Woo! Can't not do the woo. No one can't
no,
do the woo.
No, you got you can't
nobody
not
beats the woo.
Woo when it's time to woo.
Can't not woo. No, not wooing.
My friend, I am so excited to be talking about not just Miss Jackson, but about OutKast. I mean, I've been waiting for this episode.
I am so stoked, too. We were fooling around earlier, but I was playing it in the style of jazz flute because literally just a few days before this episode, and I have to say, kind of fortuitously, I got sick. We were supposed to tape this on a Wednesday, but I got sick. And then moments later, Andre 3000 announced that he was dropping a new instrumental album called New Blue Sun. So perfect timing. We've had a chance to all culturally absorb
this record.
Yeah,
I feel like OutKast is back in the public eye, is back out there in the zeitgeist, and what a perfect time to talk about not just their crazy career path,
right,
but in particular the Stankonia album, you know, which is sort of like at the halfway mark of their career. So I think, you know, what better timing could it be?
Perfect timing, exactly. Yeah.
All right, we need every single second of the show, so we're just going to jump right in. I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And I'm producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury, a.k.a. the guy who sometimes, frequently, often even, talks about, and even whispers about, interpolation.
And this is One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this episode of One Song and for giving our podcast studio an unbelievably smooth, sustainable makeover. Here on our show, we dive deep into the music, dissecting every beat and lyric. Sustainability is just like that. Each eco-friendly choice we make is like a single note that contributes to life's melody. That's why Heartbeat and the USB are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets. To see our sustainable studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
So today we're talking OutKast. Today we're talking Miss Jackson.
Yes.
This is a song that went three times platinum.
Wow.
It was the first OutKast single to hit number one on the Billboard charts.
Awesome.
And was part of two Grammy Awards in 2001 when it was the best rap performance by a duo or group for the song Miss Jackson. And then the album itself won Best Rap Album. So Diallo, I want to start by asking you this. Miss Jackson drops in 2000. Mm. So right around hip-hop's 25th birthday. What does this song say about the evolution of the genre of hip-hop?
It's so interesting. I feel like it's a group maturing and it's also a genre maturing. Like if you think about it, like this song is about, you know, the sloppiness of breakups, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, or, you know, having children out of wedlock, one would assume, like, you know, this is, there's no surprise here. Andre had been in a serious relationship with Erykah Badu. The Miss Jackson in the song is based on her mom.
Right.
But, I mean, it's a very mature thing to be... I mean, like, if you think about it, it was literally only... Okay, this is 2000. 15 years earlier, you still got, like, you know, Run DMC. It's like that. That's the way it is. You know, you still got Curtis Blow. Like, these are great songs. Right. But these are essentially, like, party songs.
Party rocking, braggadocio.
Party rocking, yeah. Some bragging going on. My Adidas, my shoes are better than yours. Right. Like, this is literally talking about the intricacies of a relationship. So... It's almost bizarre that you know, hip hop's been around for 50 years at exactly the halfway mark for hip hop. You know, you've got this great, you know, flowering and maturing that had been kind of coming along throughout the 90s. I mean, like, I feel like the 90s is when hip hop starts taking on more complicated subjects, and albums like The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, you know, the Outkast records, you know, there are more and more people, you know, trying to sort of expand what the genre can talk
about. Well, talking about expanding the genre, we're literally talking about that moment at the Source Awards where expanding that the geography of hip-hop.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit about what happened
Absolutely.
In 1995 at the Source Awards?
Those who know me know I'm from Atlanta. You know, Outkast, when he was at the Source Awards saying, you know...
Closed-minded folks, you know what I'm saying? It's like, we got a demo tape and don't nobody want to hear, but it's like, this the South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
Like... You know, we heard that, and we had been supporting Outkast. I want to take a step back and just talk about Atlanta real quick. And you know, Atlanta's sort of a interesting city from on the hip-hop map at the time. You know, you basically had two camps. You know, I figured
this is the insider view, because you're growing up, you are in Atlanta.
I am
growing
in
up in
this,
Atlanta.
Okay,
yeah, yeah.
I went to high school. They're older than me, but I went to high school with the Goody Mob. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I went to the same mall
That's so
as
crazy.
Outkast, Goody Mob, Organized
Mall.
Noise. Oh, we all went to Greenbrier Mall. And actually, that's something I want to talk about, too. So real quick, the hip-hop map is that Atlanta at that time was between three places. We had Miami booty shake music coming, you know, from Miami. Mm-hmm. We had West Coast. And I'm going to lump, sorry, Texas, I'm going to lump the Texas rappers like Scarface and Rap-A-Lot. You know, you had, you know, the West Coast rappers and N.W.A. and Dr. Dre and that whole sound. And then, of course, you know, some of us, I feel like in white schools, the punks didn't get along with the new romantics. Well, in my high school, there were clearly camps. Like, there are the kids who listen to West Coast and Texas, you know, for the lack of a better term, gangster rap. And then there were, you know, sort of my clique, which, you know, we were nerdy. We got the homework done, y'all. And we were more into De La Soul,
is
Tribe Called Quest.
Crew?
Yeah, there was a lot of... you know what group from Atlanta gets forgotten a lot is Arrested Development.
Right.
You know, like, yeah. The way that those
Outkast
guys dressed...
Outkast is not the first, are they?
Like,
Outkast are not technically the first. Arrested Development's on the radio. They had hits.
Listen, Atlanta had rappers. And I'm glad you bring this up. Atlanta had rappers, but... You know, like, as far as establishing an Atlanta sound, I don't know that we had that. Like, Speech and Arrested Development, they felt very much like they went to, you know, Morehouse and Spelman, like what we call the Atlanta University, you know, the AU schools. Like, and I had people at my schools who dressed like that, and they had, like, Diggable Planet style names. There was a guy in my high school, his name was Hashim, but everybody called him Grasshopper. You know, like, there was like that. See, they dressed like hippies a lot. They dressed like, there was a lot
was
of Afrocentric
clothing
going on. Was that
because he was so
wise?
Was that a Karate Kid thing? What is that?
You know what? Like, everybody, he tried to rap. Me and my friends, we all tried to rap. We still have those raps committed to memory. I'm not going to do them today. But, you know, like, it was really, like, half the kids wanted to, you know, be about that N.W.A. type life.
Believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of Compton.
Yeah.
And the other half were really about, like, that De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest type life.
But odd as it may be, without my one and two, where would there be my three mates possibly? And that's a magic number.
And... You know, Arrested Development was there. We had a group called Y'all So Stupid that was very, like, very few people remember Y'all So Stupid.
Shout out to Y'all So Stupid.
Shout out to Y'all So Stupid. Shout out to Parental Advisory, which was a group that was sort of in the same clique as Outkast, and they went first.
They were inspired by Tipper Gore's warning stickers.
Well, listen, I'm telling you, PA, as they were short, you, if you listen to that first Outkast record, he gives a lot of shout outs to PA.
Interesting.
Because Parental Advisory was in that same, these are all proto rap groups out of the Dungeon Family click. And they they were more Tri-Cities.
We're going to talk about the dungeon in a minute.
Growing up in Southwest Atlanta, when I did, late 70s, it was just like, it was like a black Mecca. It was like, it was middle class. It was black. We still, the white people didn't take their golf course. We had two golf courses in our area. You had these beautiful homes with like these long lawns. And it was 100% black. And the reason I bring all that up is to say that if you're black in an all black environment, well, then suddenly you're not known as like the black guy. Does that make sense? And so at my high school, the jocks were black and the nerds were black. The bullies were black. The bullied were black. And I look at Andre and I look at his path and you just realize that this is what happens when people sort of are allowed to be more than just their skin tone. And when they're able to say, okay, what's really going on inside with me?
Wow. You know, you can identify.
Yes. It makes sense that one guy is sort of like a street guy. And another guy is like this amazing artistic poetry guy.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense because in the cultural stew that is Atlanta, you can be as, you know, you can be whatever you decide to be. Atlanta was a very special place to live if you were black growing up in the 80s and the 90s. It just was. And
it sounds that way. Yeah.
The city's a little bit different now, but it was that unique cultural stew that we all grew up in that allowed for us and TLC and eventually the TIs and the Ludacris's and this whole wave of Atlanta artists to just blow up and do their thing. I mean, like, I feel like only Atlanta could have produced us when it did.
Well, thanks, y'all. That's such a great insight into like the place, the geography, the time, you're actually having been there on the ground.
I feel like it's the one musical scene that I can absolutely say, yeah, I
seem intimately familiar 100%. With like what was happening because you were there.
It made a lot of sense to me.
Right. So just before we get into the song, I'm going to take a quick step back, talk a little bit about the history of the band. And it actually starts, it's funny, little fun fact.
It's funny to call them a band. I always think of rap groups.
They're a band. They're a duo.
Let's talk about this rap band.
They're a band. Well, it's funny because they are almost called the Misfits. Like that's crazy.
That's really funny to me. Yeah.
Because obviously Outkast, Misfits, AT Aliens, these are all of a theme. Like these guys felt like outsiders.
The first record store, like that had like record store culture that I can remember was down in Little Five Points. It was called Wax and Facts, I'm pretty sure. And they always had like this gigantic Misfits poster up in there.
The great thing about the Misfits is that they're a great band. They're one of my favorite. And I actually wanted to talk about them on the Metallica episode because they influenced them. But once Outkast found out that there was already a band called the Misfits, who sound like this, by the way? So the story of the band is, it's 1992. We talked a little bit about, Diallo talked a little bit about Organized Noise. This is a group of three dudes, Rico Wade, Ray Murray, and Sleepy Brown, who basically, and I think it was Rico Wade's literally downstairs basement, but it's barely a basement. There's a dirt floor. So they call it the dungeon.
The dungeon.
And this is where they start to make music.
Yep.
And their production
trio. And it was a place that they could go.
Yep. Hang out.
And hang out. Yep. And I think
like another family kind of unit.
I think it came into play when they eventually opened their own studio, Stankonia. That was the name of the studio.
That's what we're going to get into. Yeah.
Sure. And I was saying, like, you know, Andre was like, you know, we always needed a studio that wasn't going to bill us just for hanging out there. And literally, he was like, because I think that's where we get the best stuff is when you can just stay there and play around with them, be like, no, that doesn't work. And then just sit back and relax several more hours and then keep working.
And not worry about like being on the clock exactly as you say. Just experiment, fiddle around.
And I don't think that Sleepy, Rico, and Ray have gotten their flowers. I think Organized Noise is almost like the sauce, like we all know. But like your typical person walking around listening to music doesn't always know that these songs
how the music
produced,
gets made.
Everything
the
from TLC's Waterfalls to Ludacris's Saturday. Like all they've produced so many songs.
That's right.
Yeah, anyway.
That's right. Well, you're absolutely right. And this is where Outkast as like teenagers, literally, is where Andre and Antoine as like literally 17, 18-year-olds learning how to write music and make music together.
I don't mean to keep interrupting, but you keep bringing up things that remind me of things that happened in my childhood, and I can't believe it. The first time I ever saw Outkast perform live, it was at a place called My Brother's Keeper. This was a 15 and over club across the street from Greenbrier Mall. Whoa. In the old Westgate. Shout out to anybody who remembers any of these. The Westgate Shopping Mall, which was like the rundown Greenbrier. Let's be honest.
What year is this?
This is probably late 94, 95.
So they've put out their first album.
It's just the first album. It's just the
but
first
that's
album.
It. Okay.
And they're so
Southern playalistic.
They're so
like
nice
music.
Because I remember... I'm about their age. I'm about 18 or 19. But I went to this place because I was like, I love this group. And
you'd
because
heard
we
of
were
them,
15 and
stars.
Over, because we were 15 okay. and over club, I remember they edited everything. Everything they got up there and rapped. So they didn't do any swearing because they wanted the kids to be right. pretended like that. But the kids, we do we were going crazy over songs like Crumbling Herb, which is just a fantastic, I mean, like, these are songs that most people don't know now. But, like, go back and listen to that first Outkast album. I mean, like, you're not going to hear a lot of flute, but if you say that you love Outkast...
We're not saying no flute.
There's actually some flute. There's some flute. I don't think he's playing it. There are so many good songs on that first album. It's booming like rockets. Folks try to stop it, but they know that it's bad. This is probably as good a point as any for me to bring this up. The first time I ever saw Outkast music, I actually went to the store to buy a Wu-Tang CD. And I was just going through the bins, as people typically do. And I remember pulling out a CD where the guys had on Atlanta, they had on Atlanta Braves hats. And I was like, what? And I look on the back and they had I didn't know at the time, I don't think I knew it was an interlude, but they had a thing that said, "Welcome to Atlanta." It was like the fourth track on the album or something like that. This is Southern Playalistic. I had never heard any of their music.
Used to seeing the word Atlanta.
I was not used to it. Yeah, yeah. I bought it unheard. I bought a CD. I did not know the band, but I was like, they got something on here called Welcome to Atlanta. Yeah. I'm down. And I was immediately blown away. This must have been 94, because by the summer of 95, I was actually an unpaid intern at LaFace. It's the first job I've ever had not just the music business, in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
But somewhere in 94, I came across that CD and I was like, oh, I got to pick this up.
What's so interesting to me is that it's, I'm not the first to say it, but the geographic aspect of hip hop, the story of hip hop being such a geographic story. And if you've seen that great Netflix Hip Hop Evolution series, like, every episode is about, we start in New York and then we go, you know, there's Atlanta, there's New Orleans, there's every single city gets its own episode, because every single city has its own story, and every single story has very significant differences in what happened,
every city.
And I was just going to say, just to finish that thought, while there is clearly an equivalent in other genres, like, I definitely didn't grow up thinking about rock and roll being, although of course Metallica was a local band, I was kind of proud of them, Faith No More, I had some sense of the bands that were like local bands. It wasn't a big part of my consciousness in the same way. Like, I certainly didn't get excited that when I saw that a band was from San Francisco in the same way. Like, oh, the Jefferson Airplane is from San Francisco, whatever, who cares? Like, a little bit of pride, but it didn't have the same significance to me that clearly hip hop, the geographic centrality of hip hop.
Yeah, it means something in hip hop, you know, to know that those guys are near you. I mean, like, I would hear references. This is how desperate I was to hear something that I thought related back to my hometown. Digable Planets, at one point, Miss Mecca had a line where she was like, yeah, something, 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 right down to Ludlow. And I was like, oh, maybe she's talking about Ludlow Porsche, that guy who has a radio show in Atlanta. Maybe she's actually heard Ludlow. And then I get to New York and I'm like, oh, Ludlow's a street. Right. Oh, okay, good for them. Another New York street, getting a shout out. But then here comes Outkast, and especially with Goody Mob. Goody Mob just took it to the nth degree. Like, they had a song where they're like, can somebody please turn the lights on the 166? I can't see where the hell I'm going. And I was like, the 166, that freeway that goes by Greenbrier Mall, like that, because for a while, like, the lights were never on that freeway and it was dangerous, you know. And like, yes, there's something about hearing the local guys rap about the very
about
local
representation.
Things.
It's connecting. I know what that is. That's me. I feel connected to this band. I feel connected to this.
They had so much love, and that you know, again, shout out to Arrested Development. Shout out to Y'all So Stupid. It was really Outkast, Organized Noise, Mr. DJ, who is sort of like the Ali Shaheed Muhammad of Outkast. Mr. DJ does not get mentioned like a lot.
Third or fourth guy, but he's in the crew.
He's the third guy, technically, especially in the days of that first album. Goody Mob, they established what the Dirty South sound was going to be. Like, they were like, you know, as much as Seattle was established by
Nirvana
and Trees. Screaming Trees. They're a Seattle grunge band, yeah. Right? As much as those grunge bands said, this is the sound of Seattle, yeah. I feel like Outkast and Goody Mob and all those guys said, this is the sound of the South. Distinctly the South. Not Texas, not Miami, but everything else. Alabama, South
Carolina.
But that
meant a lot to you because especially in this moment, as we've been talking about, Atlanta, prior to Outkast, it exists a little bit culturally on the radar. We've talked about Arrested Development, but suddenly it explodes. It's huge. It's great. You're proud. And you recognize these individuals as people.
Yeah.
Like, you recognize the art they're making. It speaks to you on many, many levels, not the least of which is that you're from the same place they are.
Absolutely.
And how exciting is that?
It was a very exciting time to be from Atlanta.
Another reason why organized noise are so important is philosophically what they're doing. They're teaching Outkast about songwriting and production. And one interesting thing that they're doing that's a little different, it's not the first time we've got on the West Coast, we've got Dre and the whole Death Row crew are doing alternatives to sampling-based music, sampling-based hip-hop. But organized noise in particular are really focused on how much instrumentation can we add? How much can we grab the talented bass players from the community, bring them into the studio and work with them and recreate ideas? And they are definitely interpolating and they're not sampling, but the sampling becomes more of a sonic thing. It's less of a whole, taking a whole two bar loop of something and looping it. They're doing something completely different.
I mean, The Chronic cannot be overstated how huge that... I mean, The Chronic is like the atom bomb of hip-hop. Because
Chronic is the atom bomb, and it's the reason why they convinced LaFace to sign Outkast, because they're uncomfortable. It sounds like L.A. Reid and LaFace Records are not like... It's not their expertise. These are R&B guys. These are like pop radio guys.
Yeah.
And Arrested... Organized Noise keeps coming in and saying, hey, look, we got these great... These two guys, Outkast, are going to be the next big thing. And L.A. Reid is not aware of, not comfortable with, not familiar with hip-hop until The Chronic comes out, sells a billion copies. He's like, I don't know much about this, but you guys keep telling me you got a hip-hop act that's going to blow up. Here's the green light.
Babyface and L.A. Reid were probably like, yo, we got to get on this rap money.
Right, got to get some of this rap money. So they do, and they put out this 1993 comp, A Very LaFace Christmas, with Player's Ball, which is ostensibly a Christmas song. And what's funny about it,
it's beginning to look a lot like what? Follow My Every Step.
Exactly.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
It tricks you right off the bat with
that
first line.
I'm telling you, Andre came in strong. He was like, I'm already going to reinterpret.
Let's play that.
You know. It's beginning to look a lot like wood. Follow my every step. Take notes on
how I crept. I was about to go in depth. This is the way I greet my season. I mean, I love that version, but when they took off the sleigh bells and redid it, I like this version better, personally. Tell me, what did you expect? You thought I'd break my neck to help y'all deck. I love these chords, man. Now, what were we going to say about these two different versions?
Okay, so... The version with sleigh bells. Yeah. First off, I had all this stuff. Yeah. I was at Tower Records all the time. It's actually the first place I ever met Questlove. He was standing out there. I was like, that guy's in the Roots.
Shout out to Questlove.
Saw him outside. That Tower Records by Lenox Square. It's the first time I ever heard Nirvana, I want to say, was in there. I was like, Bleach, what the hell is that? I had all three versions. But let me tell you, the version that you just played, not only is it most people's favorite, but it was extremely hard to find. That's not the version that got a lot
of
play.
It's not on the album.
The
on
album
Spotify,
version was the one that got the most play, and it was in the music video and all this stuff. The version that you play, which goes by a couple of names, but I usually see an extended remix. Sometimes it's called extended TV remix. That was a really hard find. I had to literally go on the nascent web and find it because it was on Japanese pressings and stuff. But no, trust me, anytime you could break that one out at a party, which
that's
I did, I eventually did
one.
Find the 12-inch once I started DJing. That was the version that we all love. And it is because of those piano chords. They're so sweet.
Jazz. They're
absolutely.
So jazz.
They're freaking beautiful.
Right.
Beautiful
they're,
chords.
They're like deep house chords. You literally
do
deep
I love
house
them. Yeah, well, as soon as you said that, about 19,000 laptops fired up and then put on GarageBand.
Right. So very quickly, that song comes out. That's Player's Ball. The first LP comes out, Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music. Just to get us to Stankonia, 1996, second album, AT Aliens drops. It's got that song Elevators, Me and You, which actually went to number 12. Around me and you,
your mama and your cousin too. Rolling down the strip on bows, coming up slamming Cadillac doors.
I was surprised to find that that was bigger than on the third album, Rosa Parks. I thought that was the bigger song of the two, but Rosa Parks never got past number 55, surprisingly enough. The legend of Outkast is only growing, and their popularity is growing. They're big. They're opening for Lauryn Hill on their Miseducation tour.
Andre is starting to wear like the football protective gear in music videos. Like, we can already tell that our boy is like going in a new direction, and I think that's one of the lovely things about Atlanta at this time is that, in a weird way, it wasn't anti-competitive, you know what I mean? Like, I really do feel like a lot of the groups
people were running,
supporting
were
each other. Absolutely, yeah. Because we were just happy to see, at least from the outside, it felt like everybody was happy to see Atlanta taking its place at the table. You mentioned the LaFace Christmas album earlier. Players Ball by Outkast, that was like something that a couple of hip-hop people listened to, and Organized Noise produced that track.
Yeah.
But they also produced TLC's Sleigh Ride, which is one of the best, makes a lot of people's holiday playlists. It felt like everything was just like flowering, you know, for years and years. But anyway, let's get back to this.
You just made me think of like the evolution of hip hop Christmas songs, because I'm just thinking about
that was enough. It was hip
hop. What is that? Run DMC.
That's Run DMC.
Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. Like, we've come a long way from that.
We've come a long way from that. I mean, like, this is also, I mean, like, as much as I love Sleigh Ride by TLC, this is also when Uncle Luke does a, "What you gonna get for Christmas?" Like, you know, like, there was a slew, like, Death Row had their Christmas album. They had a Santa Claus is going straight to the ghetto. You know, like, Nate Dogg, R.I.P. Nate Dogg. Like, there were a lot of good Christmas songs in 90s hip-hop.
Christmas
but
rapping,
we digress.
Curtis Blow. Yeah.
Depending on when this comes out, this might be very timely. Anyway, go ahead.
So this leads us all to 2000 and the fourth album, Stankonia, which coincides with this, the artist growth, the band growth, the worldwide popularity of Outkast has gone from being two teenagers in this dungeon to now they have their own studio. They're ready to break out. They actually buy Bobby Brown's studio.
I heard that. They said they waited outside for Bobby Brown for like days on end.
And he sold it to them. They renamed it Stankonia. I didn't know the Onya part. You know, stank is stank, you know, funky. Yeah. But like the Onya, I was always like, that feels like a place. It feels like kind of like...
It's supposed to be both a place and a pun.
But literally, it turns out to be the title of a poster in Andre's bedroom called Plutonia. It comes from Plutonia, which is a futuristic city. So a place I imagine you can open yourself up.
I think it's probably all those things. Stankonia sounds like, I'm going to put that stank on ya. This is also at a time when Outkast is saying, like, they're like, stank you very much. Like, they say that a lot in the interviews. But go ahead.
I love the puns, though. I love, like, the wordplay. Like, yeah, I mean, we're going to get into it later, but even Andre 3000, the new record, like, all of the song titles are so funny. Like, it's from the Flute album. He's a funny dude.
A lot of humor between both of them.
A lot of humor.
And I want to talk about that at some point, because I do feel like a lot of times, you know, people are like, who's better, Paul or John?
Yeah.
Or Mick and Keith? Or, you know, Guy or Tomas to the real heads. I feel like Outkast is strong because, you know, as much as Andre kills it whenever he does guest verses, Big Boy's had some amazing guest verses of his own. I like the two of them together because there is a, you know, the same way I'm like, Atlanta wasn't competing with itself to see who was going to be number one. Like, I don't get the sense they're trying to occupy each other's lanes. You know what I mean? Like,
they respect each other's creativity.
There's so much mutual
respect. They bounce off each
other.
They love each other as brothers. Yeah. And at this point, they're ready to start producing for themselves. They gradually started acquiring other skills. Andre's there, like, learning to play guitar. And it turns out that he starts to write the song we're about to talk about today on guitar. And they bring in a third guy who's their touring DJ. That's David, Mr. DJ Sheets.
Who's been there from the beginning.
Absolutely. The three of them form this Earth Tone 3 production crew. And that is the new core operation. They're still working with Organized Noise. They actually do four songs on this record with them. Not the least of which is So Fresh and So Clean.
An amazing track.
Right, of course. And they are taking a cue from what they've already learned. They're bringing in live instrumentation from Atlanta club musicians, and they're making their new record. They're making Stankonia, which brings us to the song of the day, Miss Jackson, from the fourth album, Stankonia. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it. First, I thought Miss Jackson was the, it's just the passage of time. I thought it was the first single off this album. B.O.B. was the first one, Bombs Over Baghdad, which I really liked that song. But apparently, critics loved it and audiences were kind of weird, even for Outkast, and didn't really respond to it, even though it's got a really upbeat, drivey sound. But it's Miss Jackson that captured everybody's attention.
Yeah,
so let's talk about it. We have the stems. And what is the first stem from this song that you want to play for us? First off, can I just say I'm excited that we're doing a hip-hop song with pure stems.
Right.
Like you said, it's not a lot of sampling. There is some sampling.
There is some sampling here. There's some creative reuse of recorded material.
Yeah.
But if you will.
But let's start with the stems. What's the first stem you got for us?
Okay, so let's start with the drums because the song starts with that famous reverse sound. And this is what it is. So this is Raj Kala playing the congas. And I'll play it for you as it is in the mix first, and then I'll play it backwards so you can hear what that is. Here's how the song starts. Okay, and now let's hear that reversed, in other words, forwards. Here's what was actually performed.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah. It's just a guy playing the congas.
And
that
and
guy...
playing backwards, that's what gets the...
Yep. That's Raj Kala playing congas and then having... And then the tape was flipped backwards, okay? So we got that, and then we've got our beat. Let's listen to that. As you can hear, there's another backwards element there, that hi-hat. It's a backwards hi-hat. So in the mix, you've got...
Yeah! I was like, what instrument is that?
Yeah. Incredibly dope.
Right? Wow, that's really cool.
All right. And then if you think that's cool, listen to this. This is on bass. We have an actual performer here as well. And what's cool is this guy is a legend in his own right. This is bass guitar as performed by Aaron Mills from the band Cameo. That'll bring the beats back in. When you learn that it's Cameo, it's oh yeah, of course that's Cameo.
It sounds like, I want to hear Candy.
Let's hear some clear. I got Candy queued up right here for you, baby.
Oh, there you go.
So tight.
Roses really smell like boo-oo-oo. You really feel like you have an idea of what the... Where Andre and I want to say Andre and Andre, where Andre and Big Boy, where their heads are at while they're making this album.
Yeah, it's so funny to think about Cameo specifically because those guys are guys are funny and crazy and bringing ideas from all kinds of different sources into the funk, right?
I mean, I think humor is strong in the Outkast family.
Is it strong in Atlanta? Is that an Atlanta thing?
Is this an Atlanta sense of humor? There's something... Hell yeah. I'll never forget when Andre got out on a song with Kesha, of all people, and he was like, I call her Keisha because she thinks it's good to her. That was some low-hanging Atlanta humor fruit, and yet nobody beat him to it. So, Andre, he was always going to come with some jokes.
He's always coming with some jokes. All right. Well, let's move on. We got some piano as well. This is another live performance. This is from Marvin Chans Parkman. I don't know why his nickname is Chans, but this is what Chans, when Chans gets on the synth, this is what Chans
music can only have one Marvin.
All right. And here he is playing piano. Oh, and by the way, this is a part here. Let's listen in the mix and then we'll talk about it.
I mean, I always thought that was brilliant. I heard that the first time. I was like, oh, they incorporated the wedding song.
Yeah, that's all he's playing throughout the entire song, too. It's just that loop. And it is the wedding march, right?
But it's also got that,
ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, it's got that little part at the end. So it's not just, but it's brilliant.
But that is an interpolation, if you will. Although technically it's more of a reference.
Is that canon in D? What is that?
That is the bridal chorus from Richard Wagner's 1850 opera.
Shout out to Wagner.
Lohengrin. It's long out of copyright.
Flight of the Valkyries.
Long out of copyright, so it's not protected. Yeah. Anyone can, you can write a new song using that if you like.
Beethoven was
the wedding march, right? Yeah. So that's the Here Comes the Bride. It's often called Here Comes the Bride. Yeah, it's not the technical name. There you go. Yeah. Exactly. And that also shows up, by the way, in the guitar part, which Dre is playing himself in the background. This is a little harder to hear, but it kind of cuts through the mix every now and then, especially at the end. But here's Andre 3000 on electric guitar. Then a little Jimmy. A little wah-wah Jimmy. Jimi Hendrix wah-wah there.
Totally.
And that's happening throughout the whole song. What's cool is that it's not a loop. He's just playing it over and over again. So it gets it's a little different every time. And he's he's not Jimi Hendrix. So
Outkast has always...
a little wonky in a good way.
They start at one place, and throughout their whole career, it's such a... It's just like the Beatles in the sense that, like, even the casual observer can see, oh, the group that they are in 2000, or the group that they are, heaven forbid, by 2005, is not the same group that put out Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music in 1994. It's just not the same group.
And they're growing.
You're on the ride with them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, no, why should they stay the same?
I mean,
let them go wherever their imagination takes them.
We're going to continue through the stems, obviously. We're going to get to the vocals and everything else.
That's
and I
right.
can't wait to get through all of that. But I also can't wait to have, like, our big conversation about, like, the current stuff that he's doing. Because I'm so excited
about
Andre 3000's creative journey and his creative, like,
And I want to talk about Big Boy because I feel like he has had a journey of his own.
Okay.
Listen, after the break, we'll be getting deeper into Miss Jackson and we'll be sharing our one more song picks. So we'll be right back. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this episode of One Song and for giving our podcast studio an unbelievably smooth, sustainable makeover. Here on our show, we dive deep into the music, dissecting every beat and lyric. Sustainability is just like that. Each eco-friendly choice we make is like a single note that contributes to life's melody. That's why Heartbeat and the USB are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets. To see our sustainable studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, so let's get back into the stems, the synths, that kind of high-pitched keyboard, just the three-chord thing that goes through the entire song. It's actually credited not to any individual, but it's credited to Earth Tone 3 as a whole. And here it is. That's it. Just really simple. Three chords and a bass note.
But... can I say that is some sheer synth perfection?
That is some synth. That's some Depeche Mode.
I really like that.
Some actually Human League, I'd say more than Depeche Mode. Depeche Mode would be a little more intricate.
Play it again. Let's hear it one more time.
I'm hearing a lot of Human League in that.
Orchestral.
Yes.
In the dark.
Oh, you know what? Orchestral. For the
OMG.
For the tone, you're right. It's OMD. For the sound, for some reason, here, it reminded me of this, just because we're talking about it.
Or, by the way, Andre has a line. He's like, softly, as if I play piano in the dark. Like, I wonder if he was thinking that when he played that.
Just because we have a podcast and it's fun to play music, it just reminds me of this.
Sorry, Mr. Jackson.
I am for real. Never meant to make your daughter cry. Apologize. Me and your daughter got this thing going on. You say it's poop love, we say it's real strong.
Man, the Human League, like the potential for the Human League Outkast crossover.
If anybody's still doing mashups, first off, you're 20 years too late. But try that. See if it works.
Yeah. It's your idea now. Take
Serato,
it run with it.
Can isolate the vocals.
Take it and run with it. We don't need to own that.
Run with that.
Okay.
So those are your synths. We've now heard all the instruments. And if you'd like to, we can get into the vocals. There's a lot of fun
stuff. I'd love to get into the vocals. Tell me about these vocals, because these lyrics are outstanding and grown up.
I was actually thinking it might be a fun way to do this. Is there a vocal in particular? Because there's so many great lines. I'll start with one, and then I'll bounce it to you. You pick the next one. So I'm going to start with let's hear the baby's mama's intro thing, because that's one of many iconic moments.
That just sets the whole thing off. Okay.
Yeah, this one right here goes out to all the baby's mamas. Mamas.
Nice. Who's that in the background?
Baby mamas.
I mean, it makes the song instantly a classic. You know, we were talking about how, you know, technically Andre's first line in any Outkast song that was ever released was, you know, it's beginning to look a lot like what? Like, it immediately grabs you.
Sets the tone.
Yeah.
It tricks you.
And this one is the same way. It's like, this one goes out to all the baby's mamas. Like, it's almost like in a pre-TikTok age, he understood that there was a certain brain algorithm that's like, man,
hook
you got about
seconds.
10 seconds to get me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I saw the DLC talking about working with Snoop on Nothing But a G Thing. And he was like, Snoop, you know, you got to say something at the top of this song that's going to immediately draw people in.
Yeah.
And he was like, and with that advice, Snoop wrote 1, 2, 3 into the foe. He's like counting. Like, everybody knows what's going to come next, but how are you going to reinvent counting? Like good rap songs, they draw you in from the very beginning.
That's so true. Yeah, that's such like an innovation of the medium. I mean, like, you don't necessarily have that in like Beatles songs aren't like 1, 2, John, here I come. Like that might have been a good idea.
But that might have worked.
That might have worked. Right, back in the day.
Paul and John, they left some money on the table. Just saying. They should have spelled it out. J to the O to the H to the N. LENNON.
Just
I mean,
spelling.
Like, it would have worked.
Keep
it
simple. Just spell your name.
That's a lot of fun.
All right, so now it's your turn. What lyric would you like me to isolate next? So many iconic lyrics
in this
one.
Like the second half of Andre's verse on this song.
Okay.
I think when Erica Badu said she heard the song, Big Boy's verse, she did not like.
She
thought it was like aggressive. Rude and disrespectful.
A bit aggro.
But she said when she heard Andre's part, she was like, it felt, to her anyways, like truthful. So I think with that in mind, maybe something that plays like the second half of his verse, because there's one line in particular when he says, and yes, I will be present on the first day of school and graduation. Like, that is such a mature line, like going back to what we were saying earlier in the episode about hip hop is maturing at this point. But like that line, like it's so pregnant with like a relationship that must still be maintained, and yet everybody's compromising. Like, that line kind of blows me away.
That's beautiful. Right.
It happened for a reason. One can't be mad. So know this, know that everything's cool. And yes, I will be present on the first day of school and graduation.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
I love it. Let's get technical with Andre's
like
voice
ending.
Because he has such a rich voice just when he's talking. Like, when you hear him in interviews, you're like, oh, yeah, that dude. I guess if there was no such thing as rap, maybe he would have been an announcer. You know what I mean? Like, he's got such a rich voice. And yet, I do hear some effect on that.
Yeah, there's a delay.
Is that what that is? Is that a delay?
Thoughts of he asking what happened to the feeling that
there's reverb. There's reverb, which gives it that feeling of being in a church.
Yes.
And then
I always think like a big hallway.
And then at the end of the line, you can hear a little delay tail.
Thoughts of he asking what happened to the feeling that her and me had. I pray so much.
Actually, I take that back. That's all reverb that we're hearing in this mix.
There's something about his lyrics. You know, I think about this a lot because there's some rappers who I like them, but it's hard for me, lifelong hip hop. It's hard for me to understand what they say. His enunciation is so clean and clear that I've never had a doubt when I really listen what Andre was saying. And yet it's still super complicated and syncopated and off the rhythm. I'm reminded of a line on TLC's album, the last song on Crazy Sexy Cool, I believe is a song called Something Wicked This Way Comes. And he says, I remember back in a time when the only signs we had were pickets. You know, like, just from the start, he's hitting you, you know, and then he goes into, you know, G-Ang's killing brothers for colors, things that we wear for fashion. Other brothers use it for a reason to be blasting. Like, it's just, it's well-pronounced, and yet he still doesn't lose his Atlanta accent. I'm going to keep coming back to Atlanta. Funny. Like, the Atlanta accent is not the Mississippi accent. It's not the Texas accent. It's not North Cackalack accent. It's a very specific accent.
is a very specific exit that I can fall into.
Hey,
if I need to fall into that exit, I can fall into that exit.
Oh boy,
you know what I mean? Like it's just
another Diallo in the room.
Hey, listen, I grew up there. You know what I'm saying?
And
I feel like we just don't hear it a lot from a lot of rappers. The fact that I can hear every syllable enunciated, but it's not like he's like code switching.
Yeah.
To me, is just more that makes me just think this man is brilliant. But let me also say, because I don't think it's said quite enough, especially in this world of Andre's Flute album, that Big Boy is such an important part of Outkast to me. Because again, it's like the two sides of Atlanta. There's like the very down to earth side, and there's like the aspirational artistic side. And I think that's why Outkast means so much to us, and that's why so many of us really loved Big Boy just as much as if you're a real Outkast fan, you love Big Boy. And that's why I actually like to see Big Boy. shout out to Daddy Fat Stacks. He had a lot of work that he did solo. He did work with artists in the electronic. I mean, like, if anybody has ventured out into electronic music, it's actually been Big Boy.
Sir Lucious Left Foot.
He's done a lot of. So I would ask anybody listening to this, and he was one of the first people. I mean, people forget when Janelle Monáe. I first heard about her as a member of the Dungeon Family. So, you know, like, I feel like he's also been a good steward, and he's done features with artists who were up and coming.
And Killer Mike.
Killer Mike is like the second generation Dungeon Family. I guess Future would be the third generation. You know, like, Dungeon Family has had some amazing careers launched out of that clique, and we should never ever underestimate or underappreciate.
Let me ask you, how often should we not do it? Should we never ever? Should we never ever ever?
Never ever 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 ever.
Ready?
Not at all.
Let's hear that. Ever ever.
On the oak tree, I hope we feel like this forever, 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 ever, forever, ever, forever. Never seems that long until you're grown and notice that the day by day ruler can't be too wrong.
Pause it. The other thing that Andre does a lot in his verses that I really appreciate is he's got a very sort of like wise sort of like sense of like beginnings and endings. Let me explain that. One of my favorite, this might be my favorite Outkast line of all time. It's Rosa Parks.
When the record player get to skipping and slowing down, all y'all can say is them niggas earn their crown, but until then
what's that fuss? Like, he's very much talked about there may come a time when there is no Outkast or people aren't checking for Outkast. He comes back to that often, almost as much as like Tupac talked about dying or getting shot. Like, Tupac talked a lot about that, and Andre talked a lot about there may come a time when there's no more Outkast.
He's been telling us for a long time because we're gonna get into this more in a minute, but before, you know. But there's a lot going on in Andre's creative brain, and he is looking to do things that are interesting to him exclusively. That is his life's mission. And of course, he needs to feed his family. Of course, he needs to keep shoes on his feet.
Yeah.
He's got ambitions. He's got an element of him that enjoys fame. But there's also something that drives him, which is just purely exploration and creativity and improvisational creativity at that.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is why I'm so inspired, especially by his most recent moves, after giving up the greatest hip-hop act of all time, according to many, and certainly according to the like sales of Speaker Box and Love Below, and go on to do what he wants to do with his days, you know, even though he put success down and he left it there. And everyone wonders why. Well, because he's driven by creativity.
I appreciate that. I think that, look, I listened to the Flute album over the weekend. A friend of mine was like, yo, this album going to bang the spa. And I kind of agree.
I think he would too. He's not, like, that's not a joke to him. He's like, he gets it. He knows what this is.
He's in on it. But listen, I will say this. If you really loved Outkast and you are missing Outkast, and this obviously does nothing to make you not miss Outkast. I mean, like, I give props to Leslie Jones, who did an extended riff at The Daily Show. Like, what are you doing? You know, like, I totally get where that comes from. Not because we don't appreciate artistic change. It's just that if Outkast is or was what it was for me, and presumably Leslie, just your favorite hip hop group,
right,
there is a part of you that a rhymeless instrumental flute album it only sort of exacerbates your like desire to like hear from him. You know what I mean? Sure. I remember 2007, Outkast by that point had broken up, and Andre personally had like an amazing year of features. He's on the Walk It Out remix with you know, DJ Unk. He's and Throw Some D's on It, he's on that remix and crushed it. That was the year that he came out with that epic other flow he did about marriage on the International Players Anthem by UGK. Like 2007, it's like the second Outkast broke up, he was like on, I think that's the year he did his verse on Party with Beyonce. You know, like he was coming with all these amazing verse after verse after verse. And there's a part of us that misses that. I don't want to belabor it because, again, I think that we're unified in thinking that, like, an artist needs to go where an artist needs to go. But you've heard this from me before. In my opinion, Outkast is very much like Daft Punk. Like, they came out with albums and they defined genres and they defied genres. And then they broke up. And then you just had to just resign yourself to the fact that, no, there's not going to be another Outkast album. There's not going to be another Daft Punk album. Oh, one of the members is coming out with an album, and it's all classical music. I hear that. And
this is the narcissism of fandom, though.
Like, it's like totally narcissistic.
Fans
it's
want
totally selfish.
What fans already like.
It's totally selfish. And yeah. By the way, there are enough Outkast albums that we can always go back and revisit those.
In fact, hear it in a new
way. I'm going to suggest to anybody who has never listened to Southern Playlist or Cadillac Music, you know, even though there's some lyrics in there that are probably not cool by today's standards, go back and listen to a young Andre and young Big Boy, and you'll still hear a lot of what you appreciate in later Outkast records. It's not that these groups, Outkast and Daft Punk, don't leave a musical legacy. It's just that, you know, there is a part of us that would love to see the band get back together and just do one song for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all.
And now let's listen to the iconic hook with all of its different sub-hooks. This is the hook with like multiple sub-hooks within a hook.
I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
Ooh, I am for real.
Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times.
Okay, now you have to rank the hooks. What is the top hook within a hook of that hook?
Interesting.
Is it the whoo?
I mean, the who is infectious. I think you got to have it all. I think it all comes together. Because if you take any part of it off, it's almost like Outkast itself. If you take away Big Boy, it's Andre, which is amazing, but it's not Outkast.
I don't want to just eat the burger. I want the bun. I want the ketchup.
Yes,
I want the pickles. I want it all.
I want all those layers.
Okay.
By the way, speaking of layers, I hear at least two Andre vocals in the mix. Nowadays, almost every rapper has a singing voice.
Yeah.
But like, this is still, you know, this was probably recorded in 99. Like, with the exception of Lauryn Hill, I feel like not every rapper, maybe Mos Def. Lauryn Hill and Mos Def are rapping and singing in equal parts, but this is a new look for Outkast. Like, you know, he's singing a lot.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because the other part I wanted to play for you, which is a really fun little moment, I think this is after the first chorus. It's really sweet. And he's kind of doing a little bit of everything, as you say. I'll just play it for you, and then we can talk about it.
Hope that we feel this, feel this way forever. You can plan a pretty picnic, but you can't predict the weather. 10 times out of 9, now if I'm lying, fine.
That's like a Beach Boys kind of like
counterpoint.
That was crazy. Right?
That was some Pet Sounds. But, you know, I think what's cool about that is that how many times have you heard that song? And I did not hear that other part of it ever. Because I was listening to the part that was on the beat. You know what I mean?
Right.
But like the, can't predict the weather.
Yeah.
Like that's on a very different part of the beat. That was super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. He's playing with counterpoint and he's maybe listening to the Beach Boys.
And he's talking.
There's a lot going on there. And it's a way of having multiple different vocal ideas, almost like a Mariah Carey song, right? We were joking on the Mariah Carey episode. We talked about how there's this sort of church-like moment where we have four or five different melodic lines that are playing off of each other.
Yeah.
And in the mix, it doesn't feel chaotic. If you just listen to it out of nowhere, it's like, what is this? Chaos.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because over the course of time in the song, it's built to that moment.
Also,
it's building, building, building.
He was obviously going out with and had a child with Erykah Badu. There's something about his falsetto flourishes that sounds like Erykah Badu around that time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the,
oh, that's interesting.
You know,
yeah.
I need a rim shot, baby. You know, like, there, you could... She rubbed off on him.
Well, it also reminds me of Sleepy Brown himself, who's doing hooks like that in their previous previous songs, right? He's doing his Curtis Mayfield esque kind of thing.
I mean,
players
there's
ball.
No way that
All
they
the
could.
Players. Right. Yeah.
By the way, shout out to Big Rube, who was a major part of all those early Outkast records. Yeah, it's interesting because they were obviously in the studio with Organized Noize, and the same way I'm saying some of that Erica probably rubbed off on Andre, some of that Organized Noize clearly rubbed off on them when it came time for Andre and Big Boy to produce their own songs.
Yeah, because when you're in the room with someone creatively and you see them doing it, it is representation matters. That is like, oh, that is something
I can do that.
I can try to do that, right. So, you know, internet, misinformation central, right? I'm gonna bust the myth that there's an interpolation.
Uh-oh.
There's no interpolation. The song doesn't have any interpolations or samples, but people do mistakenly, understandably, I should say, compare the hook to this song, and I'll play them back to back in a second. Now, you may recognize that melody, that's Strawberry Letter 23, the original by Shuggy Otis, which was then
was a part of Brothers
covered,
Johnson, right?
Famously covered by the Brothers Johnson. So, is that an interpolation? Are we hearing an interpolation when we hear?
I mean, whenever you play songs back to back, I always hear it. I'm like, oh, man. You know? Beethoven copied Bach. You know? Jackson.
In my humble opinion, I mean, there's similarities.
You say no.
My opinion is that's not a legally, like...
Well, you know, my take is that unless it's blatant, they should really let people, you know, create. Because I think there's too much...
Yeah.
You can play me a lot of things back to back and I can hear similarities. Even as a DJ for as many years as I've been a DJ, there are times when I'll be singing something, I'm like, what does that remind me of? And then I'll hear what it reminds me of, but I don't immediately think, oh, they copied one another. I just think that there are, what, there are 13 chords or something like that?
Only 12 notes that my
only
man 12 can play.
Notes, right. Yeah. So, like, you know, I'm not covering for Outkast, but, like, no, this is definitely not something that needs to be dragged into court.
No, this is not dragged into court. There's a similarity, but it's not the same.
Right, it's not a sample. And I did
different
think...
Different enough completely new song. This is a completely new and different song.
I could have sworn I saw somewhere on the internet they were like trying to say that this is a sample, even.
Definitely
it wasn't
a
even an interpolation. They were like, this is a sample.
I think
like,
it's in
no.
the Wikipedia entry. Like, there's a lot of garbage out there, and it's in some like ostensibly reputable sources that like most people think Wikipedia is fully reputable, but it's usually 88% of the way there, but it is not a sample.
Wiki
I would
editors,
say it's
get on the album. Podcast page and correct these lies, these scurrilous lies.
I've looked inside the song. There's no definitely a sample of Brothers Johnson in there. I think they might think, you know what I think it is? I think some people think because of that bass line I played you, that cameo. Let's play that again. Listen how funky that cameo bass line is. The Aaron from Cameo who plays live bass on this. Because in Brothers Johnson, we have a super freaking crazy funky bass line going on, which sounds like this.
I gotta say, I don't think that's similar at all. Listen,
it's not even close.
The da 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 da.
Oh, it's the melody.
It's the medley, and you know, whatever. I think that Outkast is probably safe on that front.
Yeah, we love you, Outkast. You're not infringing.
You come for Outkast, get these hands.
All right, so Diallo, this is the first time you've heard this song this way, broken up into those isolated chunks. How was that experience for you? Did it change your appreciation for the music?
Yes. Look, I always knew there was something different sonically happening with Outkast than almost any other group that was out there.
Yeah.
I think somewhere in the back of my brain, even though I didn't understand, you know, music creation back then the way I do now, that there was probably some more live instrumentation. I didn't realize the live instrumentation was to the degree. It was actually around this time, though, around the time of Miss Jackson, that one of my friends who was in an indie rock band here in L.A. came to me and was like, you know what rap group I really like is Outkast, because, like, I hear the musicians on there. And at the time, I was kind of pissed because I'm still one of those people who's like, sampling is absolutely an art, you know, like, and I'm not saying he was dissing him for that reason, but, you know, he was falling a little bit too much in love with them because of live instrumentation. But looking back now, you know, 20 years later, more than 20 years later, it does feel like you know, that was one of the things that made their production special.
It makes the texture different in a hip hop song and a rap song of this era, especially. Yeah. You know, it changes the nature of the musical bed itself is definitely different. How it was made was different. Yeah. It's performed. Not only is it performed, but there are no loops or very few loops.
Yeah.
The percussion, there are
and
loops.
I was definitely,
there are loops in the beat, but the rest of it is a human playing through for 3 minutes, which is significant because it's the sound of a band playing. Mm-hmm. And there's something amazing that I will defend as much as you will to the nth degree about sampling and what loops do. The feel of a loop is its own special thing. The feel of Kraftwerk, metronomic, precision, Daft Punk, but also the feeling of a band or performers performing is a special thing too. And I think a big part of Outkast is that.
Loved Outkast. I loved the way their music sounded different than anything else, not just on the radio, but almost anything else in hip hop. So yeah, we support live musicians. And we support
and
drum
machines.
And we
support sampling. And we support interpolations. We love it all.
Absolutely.
A lot of ways to skin a cat or to make a song, which is why skin a cat. That's a strange expression. Please don't skin cats out there.
No.
Shout out to not skinning cats.
Yeah. Don't fuck with cats.
So it's been 20 years since Miss Jackson was released. Longer, actually.
It's been a little bit longer. Yeah,
it's been a little bit longer. Where does it stand for you in the hip-hop pantheon?
A quarter century later? Look, I personally have a hard time comparing... coming up with like a top 10 anything because ultimately we're comparing art, and I tell my kids all the time, like, not everything has to be a freaking TikTok list.
What about within the Outkast catalog?
But within the Outkast catalog, look, I love this song. It means a lot to, you know, Outkast fans in the sense that, like, by this point, you really know that these guys are maturing because they're coming with deeply personal material that is not, like you said earlier, it's not bragging, it's not descriptions of street life. Like, no, this is like, hey, this is what's going on with me today. So it's way up there. I mean,
your top three. What is your top three Outkast?
My Outkast top three. Yeah. Man, now I'm on the spot. Okay, here we go. Number one, gotta go with Player's Ball, that remix that you played earlier. It is absolutely one of my favorite songs of all time. Yeah. Number two, I'm going to say She Lives in My Lap, just because it is a song that could not have been on Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music. Like, to me, that song and all its wonderful atmospheric goodness is like a truly just an amazing song. Shout out to Rosario Dawson on it. It's just an amazing song. It's just a great song. She Lives in My Lap. It almost sounds like Prince. I love the story about, we don't have time to get into today, but after they did the reunion show at Coachella, Prince called Andre to like give him advice and basically rate the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, who gets calls from Prince like that? And then my number one is a very bizarre song, considering that I really love Outkast for their rapping, but it's the spoken word masterpiece, Spodeyody Dobelicious. Lean and chicken up the scene. Gangsta bullets, black ups lit. Riding out talking shit. But to this day, there are so many classic moments in that song from a masterful big boy line, the post office ain't call you back because you had cloudy piss.
What?
Because you failed a drug test. Yeah, that's what he's talking about. Yeah. And then, you know, Andre's description of a night out that goes drastically wrong when a fight breaks out. And he says, one dude got his shirt off saying, now who want to fuck with Hollywood Colt? Which, listening to, I always thought he said Hollywood Cole, which I thought was the most badass nickname of all time. But he says Hollywood Court, which someone reminded me, I was like, once he said Hollywood Court, I was like, oh, we used to call the projects in Atlanta, a lot of times they had names like Court, so there was like Kimberly Court, and Hollywood Court was a particularly bad one. I want to say it was over near Nisky Lake, which was really nice. Like, that was where some black folks had houses on a lake. Like, I briefly dated a girl lived on Nisky Lake, and we went out in her boat. But some of the projects that were over there were like really rough, and Hollywood Court was one of them. To me, Spodeyody, musically, it's been sampled so many times. They've done house remixes of it. But to me, like, And I think why, to finish out this answer, my favorite album, standalone album by Outkast, is it, I want to say it's A Love Below and Speaker Box, but it might be Equimini. Because Equimini was more than ATLians.
I feel like it's a lot of people's favorites.
Equimini was just a
fan favorite.
It was masterful.
Yeah.
And there's so many good songs on that album. So, you know, again, I hate comparing art to art. It's not what I do. I think it's better in sports than in the world of art. But yeah, I think Spodiotti takes the top spot. And I think Equimini takes the top album spot.
Nice one.
Yeah. Okay, so before we go, we're going to do one more song. If you haven't heard the segment before, the premise is real simple. Every episode, Luxury and I will bring in a song you probably haven't heard. It's a deep cut, a hidden gem, maybe something a little obscure, Namibian drum and bass, an actually good rap rock song, or maybe even jazz flute. And then we'll share that song with each other and with you. All right, I'm going to go first. Okay, Luxury, my song... Just because I've mentioned it already twice in this episode, my song is going to be Crumbling Herb by Outkast off of their very first album.
Yes, sir. Let me dig into your brain. Folks falling like rain. Property got me selling things. Guess I'm going to explain. Jane is rolled up. No gangs beats rolled up.
Yeah, go back and listen to that because you will hear a masterful Andre verse. And it's off of their very first album called Crumbling Herb. All right, Luxury, that was my song. What do you got for us?
Great choice, my friend. This week, my song, I mean, as I've already revealed, you know, there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. I am a musician. I actually happen to have a new single that just came out. So this is me, Luxury, and this track is called Perfect Forever. Just came out. You're going to love it. Yeah, so that's me.
I like it. I think that's going to be the subject of a future episode of this podcast.
Oh, that's nice of you to say.
We want to know what you think of this week's picks. Hot or not? Spa or nah? If you have a deep cut that you want to share with us, you know where to find us. On Twitter, I am at Diallo. And on Instagram, I am at Diallo. At TikTok, I am at Diallo Riddle. So sorry about that.
Hope that's not interesting that you led with Twitter. Interesting.
It's called X now.
I'm Luxury, LuxXury. And that's on the Instagrams and on Twitter. I'm not, you know,
we're not really
on Twitter.
We're not really on X.
Skip Twitter. Just
find us on Instagram and TikTok.
If you find me on TikTok, yeah. I'm LuxuryXX. And as always, if you hear luxury in the world, it's always going to be a 2X luxury. That's who I'm at. That's who I'm at. Oh my God, I'm still sick. I'm trying to pretend like I'm not still a little sick. I'm like 2% left in sickness.
Dude, you're almost at 80%. You're
almost
doing
at 80%. Yeah.
All right, man. Help me end this thing.
All right. Well, I've been Luxury. I am Luxury. I continue to be Luxury. In spite of my illness, I am still producer, DJ, and songwriter. Luxury. So I am.
And I am actor, writer, sometimes DJ, and forever ATLian, Diallo Riddle.
That's right. And this has been One Song. We will see you next time.
This episode was produced by Matthew Baby Mama Nelson, with engineering from Marcus Hom, additional production support from Charles Childers, Jordan Calling, and Alicia Shimada. The episode is executive produced by Kevin Hart, big Atlanta Braves fan Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, Eric Weil, and Leslie Guam.
This is Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast, the promo, and in 30 seconds, I'm going to tell you why you should check out the show. I, the host Scott Aukerman, have a lighthearted conversation with famous celebrities like John Hamm, Allison Williams, Phoebe Bridgers, Jason Alexander, Natasha Lyonne, Bob Odenkirk, just to name a few. Things go a little off the rails when different eccentric characters and oddballs drop by to be interviewed as well. Each week is a blend of conversations and character work from your favorite comedians as well. Some new hilarious voices. Comedy Bang Bang, the podcast. Listen every Monday wherever you get your podcasts.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.